Kassad approved of the way the ousters had prepared their defenses. The two assault boats were grounded less than half a kilometer apart, their guns, projectors, and missile turrets covering each other and a full 160 degrees of fire. Ouster ground troops had been busy digging revetments 100 meters out from the boats, and Kassad could see at least 2 EM tanks hull down, their projection arrays and launch tubes commanding the wide, empty moor between the Poet's City and the boats. Kassad's vision had been altered. He could see the overlapping ship containment fields as ribbons of yellow haze, the motion sensors and anti-personnel mines as eggs of pulsing red light. He blinked, realizing that something was wrong with the image. Then it came to him. Besides the thickness of the light and his enhanced perception of energy fields, nothing was moving. The ouster troops, even those set in attitudes of motion, were as stiff as the toy soldiers he had played with as a boy in the Tharsis slums. The EM tanks were dug into their hull-down positions, but Kassad noticed that now even their acquisition radars, visible to him as concentric purple arcs, were motionless. He glanced skyward and saw some sort of large bird hanging in the sky, as unmoving as an insect frozen in amber. He passed a cloud of wind-blown dust hanging suspended, extended one chrome hand, and flicked spirals of particles to the ground. Ahead of them, the Shrike strode casually through the red maze of sensor mines, stepped over the blue lines of trip beams, ducked under the violet pulses of the autofire scanners, passed through the yellow containment field and the green wall of the sonic defense perimeter, and walked into the assault boat's shadow. Moneta and Kassad followed. How is this possible? Kassad realized that he had posed the question through a medium that was something less than telepathy, but something far more sophisticated than implant conduction.
He controls time.
The Pain Lord?
Of course.
Why are we here? Moneta gestured toward the motionless ousters.
They are your enemies.
Kassad felt that he was finally awaking from a long dream. This was real. The ouster trooper's eyes, unblinking behind his helmet, were real. The ouster assault boat, rising like a bronze tombstone to his left, was real. Fedmon Kassad realized that he could kill them all, commandos, assault boat crew, all of them, and they could do nothing about it. He knew that time had not stopped, any more than it stopped while a ship was under Hawking Drive. It was merely a matter of varying rates. The bird frozen above them would complete the flap of its wing given enough minutes or hours. The ouster in front of him would close his eyes in a blink if Kassad had the patience to watch long enough. Meanwhile, Kassad and Moneta and the Shrike could kill all of them without the ousters realizing that they were under attack. It was not fair, Kassad realized. It was wrong. It was the ultimate violation of the new Bushido. Worse in its way than the wanton murder of civilians. The essence of honor lay in the moment of combat between equals. He was about to communicate this to Moneta when she said,
Watch.
Time began again with an explosion of sound not unlike the rush of air into an airlock. The bird soared and circled overhead. A desert breeze threw dust against the static-charged containment field. An ouster commando rose from one knee, saw the Shrike and the two human shapes, screamed something over his tactical comm channel, and raised his energy weapon. The Shrike did not seem to move. To Kassad, it merely ceased being here and appeared there. The ouster commando emitted a second, shorter scream, and then looked down in disbelief as the Shrike's arm withdrew with the man's heart in its bladed fist. The ouster stared, opened his mouth as if to speak, and collapsed. Kassad turned to his right and found himself face to face with an armored ouster. The commando ponderously lifted a weapon. Kassad swung his arm, felt the chrome force field hum, and saw the flat of his hand cut through body armor, helmet, and neck. The ouster's head rolled in the dust. Cassatt leaped into a low trench and saw several troopers begin to turn. Time was still out of joint. The enemy moved in extreme slow motion 1 second, jerked like a damaged hollow to 4/5 speed in the next instant. They were never as quick as Cassatt. Gone were his thoughts of the new Bushido. These were the barbarians who had tried to kill him. He broke one man's back, stepped aside, jabbed rigid, chrome fingers through the body armor of a second man, crushed the larynx of a third, dodged a knife blade moving in slow motion, and kicked the spine out of the knife wielder. He leaped up out of the ditch.
Cassatt!
Cassatt ducked as the laser beam crept past his shoulder, burning its way through the air like a slow fuse of ruby light. Cassatt smelled ozone as it crackled past.
Impossible. I've dodged a laser.
He picked up a stone and flung it at the ouster manning the tank-mounted hell whip. A sonic boom cracked. The gunner exploded backward. Cassatt pulled a plasma grenade from a corpse's bandolier, leaped to the tank hatch, was 30 meters away before the explosion geysered flame as high as the assault boat's bow. Cassatt paused in the eye of the storm to see Moneta in the center of her own circle of carnage. Blood splashed her, but did not adhere, flowing like oil on water across the rainbow curves of chin, shoulder, breast, and belly. She looked at him across the battlefield, and Cassatt felt a renewed surge of bloodlust in himself. Behind her, the Shrike moved slowly through the chaos, choosing victims as if he were harvesting. Cassatt watched the creature wink in and out of existence, and realized that to the Lord of Pain, he and Moneta would appear to be moving as slowly as the ousters did to Cassatt. Time jumped, moved to 4/5 speed. The surviving troops were panicking now, firing into one another, deserting their posts, and fighting to get aboard the assault boat. Cassatt tried to realize what the past minute or two had been like for them. Blurs moving through their defensive positions, comrades dying in great gouts of blood. Cassatt watched Moneta moving through their ranks, killing at her leisure. To his amazement, he discovered that he had some control of time. Blink, and his opponents slowed to 1/3 speed. Blink, and events moved at nearly their normal pace. Cassatt's sense of honor and sanity called out for him to stop the slaughter, but his almost sexual bloodlust overpowered any objections. Someone in the assault boat had sealed the airlock, and now a terrified commando used a shaped plasma charge to blow the portal open. The mob pressed in, trampling the wounded in their flight from unseen killers. Cassatt followed them in. The phrase, "fight like a cornered rat," is an extremely apt description. Throughout the history of military encounters, human combatants have been known to fight at their fiercest when challenged in enclosed places where flight is not an option. Whether in the passageways of La Haye Sainte and Hougoumont at Waterloo, or in the hive tunnels of Lussis, some of the most terrible hand-to-hand battles in history have been fought in cramped spaces where no retreat is possible. It was true this day. The ousters fought and died like cornered rats. The Shrike had disabled the assault boat. Moneta remained outside to kill the 60 commandos who had stayed at their posts. Cassatt killed those within. In the end, the final assault boat fired on its doomed counterpart. Cassatt was outside by then, and he watched the particle beams and high-intensity lasers creep toward him, followed an eternity later by missiles which seemed to move so slowly that he could have written his name on them in flight. By that time, all of the ousters were dead in and around the overrun boat, but its containment field held. Energy dispersion and impact explosions tossed corpses around on the outer perimeter, set fire to equipment, and glazed the sand to glass. But Kassad and Moneta watched from inside a dome of orange flame as the remaining assault boat retreated to space.
Can we stop them?
Kassad was panting, pouring sweat, and literally quivering from excitement.
We could, replied Moneta. But we do not want to. They will carry the message to the swarm.
What message?
Come here, Kassad.
He turned at the sound of her voice. The reflective force field was gone. Moneta's flesh was oiled with sweat. Her dark hair was matted against her temples. Her nipples were hard.
Come here.
Kassad glanced down at himself. His own force field was gone. He had willed it away. And he was more sexually excited than he could ever remember being.
Come here.
Moneta whispered this time. Kassad went to her, lifted her, felt the sweat-slick smoothness of her buttocks as he carried her to an empty stretch of grass atop a wind-carved hummock. He lowered her to the ground between piles of ouster bodies, roughly opened her legs, took both her hands in the grasp of one of his, lifted her arms above her head, pinned them to the ground, and lowered his long body between her legs.
Yes,
whispered Moneta as he kissed the lobe of her left ear, set his lips to the pulse at the hollow of her neck, licked the salt tang sweat from her breasts. Lying among the dead, more dead to come, the thousands, the millions, laughter out of dead bellies, the long lines of troops emerging from jump ships to enter the waiting flames.
Yes.
Her breath was hot in his ear. She freed her hands, slid them along Kassad's damp shoulders, trailed long nails down his back, grasped his buttocks to pull him closer. Kassad's erection scraped her pubic hair, throbbed against the cusp of her belly. Farcaster portals opening to admit the cold lengths of attack carriers, the warmth of plasma explosions, hundreds of ships, thousands dancing and dying like dust motes in a whirlwind. Great columns of solid ruby light lancing across great distances, bathing targets in the ultimate surge of warmth. Bodies boiling in red light.
Yes.
Moneta opened her mouth and body to him. Warmth above and below, her tongue in his mouth as he entered her, welcomed by warm friction. His body strained deep, pulled back slightly, allowed the moist warmth to engulf him further as they began to move together. Heat on 100 worlds. Continents burning in bright spasms, the roll of boiling seas, the air itself aflame, oceans of superheated air swelling like warm skin rising to a lover's touch.
Yes, yes, yes.
Moneta breathes warm against his lips. Her skin is oil and velvet. Kassad thrusts quickly now, the universe contracting as sensation expands, senses dwindling as she closes warm and wet and tight around him. Her hips thrust harshly in response now, as if sensing the terrible build and pressure at the base of his being. Demanding. Kassad grimaces, closes his eyes, sees fireballs expanding, stars dying, suns exploding in great pulses of flame, star systems perishing in an ecstasy of destruction. He feels pain in his chest, his hips not stopping, moving faster, even as he opens his eyes and sees the great thorn of steel rising from between Moneta's breasts, almost impaling him as he unconsciously pulls up and back, the thorn blade drawing blood which drips on her flesh, her pale flesh, reflective now. Flesh as cold as dead metal. His hips still moving, even as he watches through passion-dimmed eyes as Moneta's lips wither and curl back, revealing rows of steel blades where teeth had been. Metal blades slash at his buttocks where fingers had gripped, legs like powerful steel bands imprison his pumping hips, her eyes. In the last seconds before orgasm, Kassad tries to pull away, his hands on her throat, pressing. She clings like a leech, a lamprey ready to drain him. They roll against dead bodies. Her eyes like red jewels, blazing with a mad heat like that which fills his aching testicles, expanding like a flame, spilling over. Kassad slams both hands against the soil, lifts himself away from her, from it. His strength insane, but not enough, as terrible gravities press them together. Sucking like a lamprey's mouth as he threatens to explode, looks in her eyes. The death of worlds. The death of worlds. Kassad screams and pulls away. Strips of his flesh rip away as he lunges up and sideways. Metal teeth click shut in a steel vagina, missing his glands by a moist millimeter. Kassad slumps on his side, rolls away, hips moving, unable to stop his ejaculation. Semen explodes in streams, falls on the curled fist of a corpse. Kassad moans, rolls again, curls in a fetal position even as he comes again and again. He hears the hiss and rustle as she rises behind him. Kassad rolls on his back and squints up against the sunlight and his own pain. She stands above him, legs apart, a silhouette of thorns. Kassad wipes sweat from his eyes, sees his wrist come away red with blood, and waits for the killing blow. His skin contracts in anticipation of the slash of blade into flesh. Panting, Kassad looks up to see Moneta above him, thighs flesh rather than steel, her groin matted from the moisture of their passion. Her face is dark, the sun behind her, but he sees red flames dying in the multifaceted pits of her eyes. She smiles, and he sees sunlight glint on rows of metal teeth. "Kassad," she whispers, and it is the sound of sand scraping against bone. Kassad tears his gaze away, struggles to his feet, and stumbles across corpses and burning rubble in his terror to be free. He does not look back.